storm is coming, and when it is over, I fear there will be little left of our world.
You read your books about UFOs and Roswell and whacked out theories and government conspiracies. I think that you want to believe. What makes you trust them?
Well, I don't know. I'm a good judge of character.
This is off planet.
Once again, Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. Off Planet Radio coming off of the websites at offplanetradio.com and offplanetradio.net. And we are in the first full week of April 2014. Many things going on around us in the sun and the moon and the skies. We've got this beginning of the tetrad of lunar eclipses. The blood moon's coming up on Tuesday, the 15th. We are entering into the Grand Cardinal Cross, and all around us right now there is just a sense of kind of an expectancy that something is going on, and there is much going on around us, and hopefully we'll cover that in future shows. I'm very delighted for this segment to have with us on the line somebody that has become somewhat of a semi-regular with us, and by us I would normally mean also Chris Holly. She's not able to be on the show tonight, so without a lot of undue introduction, I want to bring back our friend from New Jersey, MUFON and Star Team investigator Ken Pfeiffer. Good evening. Welcome, Ken.
Hey, hi, Randy. How you doing? Thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure to have you back. You not only apparently find things floating around the Earth, but also these days are discovering things on other planets as well. So you're actually above and beyond call of duty as far as a Star Team investigator goes, Ken. Give us a little bit of first your background for those who have not heard you before on previous shows, your own history, your own background, how you became interested in the subject of ufology.
Well, I'm 63 years old. I've been retired since 2000, so I decided I needed a hobby. And I've always been interested in UFOs. I've always been a stargazer, and quite frankly, I had my first UFO encounter in 1974 in the Brooklawn, New Jersey area. We were traveling south on Interstate 295. It was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, coming home from a club, me and my friend. And he was driving, I was a passenger, and we were in the Brooklawn area there in New Jersey, South Jersey, and of course Brooklawn, New Jersey is within the TCA terminal control area of Philadelphia International Airport. So the only planes that are allowed in that area are essentially planes that are landing or taking off from Philadelphia International. Well, we came from under an underpass there, and I just caught a glimpse, about a two-second glimpse of a large, very large disc that was just peeking below the overcast. Looks like the overcast is possibly about 300 feet. And this was a Turkish glowing color. I mean, I got a good look at it for about 2 seconds, and, you know, then, of course, we were driving, and before we know it, the object is behind us, and we lost sight of it. So we drove around, me and my friend, we drove around all night until the morning, as a matter of fact, looking for this thing. He didn't see it, but I did, but of course he believed me. And we drove around and, you know, eventually went home. And the next day, I believe back then in 74, it was the Woodbury Times. They ran an article. Apparently some police officers and a few people, witnesses from the Deptford, New Jersey area, they also saw essentially the same thing I did. So That was pretty exciting. That has always been with me. And after I retired, I decided to I needed a hobby. So I wanted to get into MUFON and possibly investigating UFO sightings. And I think it was around maybe 2004 is when I got my investigator's permit with MUFON, and I've been with them ever since.
So from that beginning sighting, you kind of maintained an interest. Did you follow ufology as a kid? Were you a sci-fi kid? Were you interested in aeronautics and things like that?
Yes. My father, we lived in Overbrook, New Jersey, and I was 7 years old. We moved to National Park, New Jersey. Now, my father was a Navy veteran. And he's always brainwashed me, with airplanes and the military. And we moved to a small town on the Delaware River called National Park, New Jersey, which is directly across from the Philadelphia Airport.
Yes.
Yeah, and the Philadelphia Naval Yard. So ever since then, as a matter of fact, I think the Philadelphia Naval Yard back then had a squadron of F-102 Delta Daggers that used to fly over the house in formation, getting ready to start their landing, I guess, at the airport there. So I've been associated with airplanes and things in the sky essentially all my life, and I've always had an interest in it. Of course, I was born in 1950, so I was raised during that period of these UFO movies and shows and comics and everything else that was on TV at the time. So I've been around this stuff all my life, I feel.
Yeah, we're not that far apart in age, and actually, those are my memories. The old pulp science fiction books and the 50s movies that kind of focused on what I think at that time were so-called futuristic themes, but we're kind of casting the die for the period we're in now. It's funny because some people will still find it surprising that anybody would say they saw UFO, much less as I have over the years seen multiple sightings and even encounters. But in a way, we were kind of almost trained, brought up in that. And so it feels like all of this kind of sometimes comes together synchronistically, the way things happen, that people have a sighting and it kind of confirms that there's something up there. You have two websites. The one, the most notorious or the most famous, is worldufophotosandnews.org, where you are archiving, I don't know, what have you got now, thousands of pictures on the site?
Well, actually, that's my news website. My actual website, my photo website, is worldufophotos.org. And I have close to 7,000 photos, good photos, now on my site. And quite frankly, I think every one of them is possibly a UFO, alien craft, or, whatever you want to call it. And as of right now, I'm still sitting on about 4,000 photos that I'm going through, haven't published yet. I like to do a little bit of research on them and weed out what I feel is not a UFO. Like we get a lot of photos that are maybe lens flare or something like that that people are always sending me photos. For some reason, people are always taking photos of the sun. I don't know why, but every time you do that, you 9 times out of 10, you're going to get some strange things on your photo. But it's worldufophotos.org. Right now, I'm averaging, I would say, about 120,000 logons a month, and then figures seem to be rising. And my other website is worldufophotosandnews.org. That's my website. I have about 1,000, if not more, 1,000 cases of some very, very good, very interesting, and very real UFO encounters on my website. So I think I just hit over the 200,000 mark of views on my worldufophotosandnews.org. So for your listeners, if you get a chance, check it out.
Absolutely. This is like source databases for people who want to do this kind of research. You don't shy away from using the term alien craft. I've noticed that, because you send me almost every day, you send me a posting, and I noticed that you're not shy or hesitant about tagging this as alien craft. Can give me a little bit of your definition of alien. Is it different than what we think, or is it different than what we call unidentified?
Well, quite frankly, I think it's like talking about the 600-pound elephant in a room. I think everyone thinks, I would say mostly everyone thinks, that, let's face it, UFO means alien. I mean, we're not getting all excited about, you know, possible bird photos or something like that. I mean, if somebody says they saw a UFO, I'm sure they mean they think they saw an alien craft. So, you know, a lot of the debunkers, I mean, they're notorious for you know, debunking everything. And I figure since the debunkers can go one way, I'm going to call it like it is. I'm going to call it like I feel, and I'm going to list these things as alien craft. Now, MUFON won't let me do that.
Right.
They won't let anybody mark that down on one of their, when they do an investigation, we have to classify the cases. And essentially, we classify the cases. If we don't know, even though we know it's probably an alien craft, we have to list it as unknown. And so, you know, MUFON, they're afraid to take that giant leap, and I think a lot of other people are quite frankly afraid to take that next step into ufology. And I think that's where we need to go, because we have more than enough information, especially the military information alone, from the Air Force, from the Navy, from the Army. I mean, we have tons and thousands of documented cases, and you know, if they're still saying UFO, then it's, quite frankly, to me, it's insulting.
Yeah, and I wanted you to make that distinction, because I did notice that the way you post things yourself on your websites is not the same categorization as MUFON uses, and it kind of raises a question for me of, at the top of MUFON, and maybe you don't know this, what are they thinking? The preponderance of evidence at this point is so overwhelming to suggest that these various craft are something other than our own origin of craft. I mean, we've got over 50 years of sightings, and the documentation is getting hotter and hotter as we go along, Ken. I mean, more people have cameras now. People have pretty good cameras on phones. I mean, you've got high definition on video on board most Android and iPhones today. And so we now have a very connected society. We have a society that basically has the capability of doing photography at, you know, basic level, maybe not telephoto lenses. Officially, I mean, even our own government has played footsie with all of this for so long that we really need to step it up, those who are researchers and investigators. Is there any will right now within the MUFON organizations or within the national over-organization to revise terminology?
Well, personally, I think the terminology should have been revised a long time ago. Jacques Vallée, as a matter of fact, he's the one who came out with a lot of these abbreviations for close encounters and everything else. You know, even that needs to be updated. I've been preaching this for a long time. I think that, like I said before, a lot of these organizations, I feel, are possibly, they're being regulated by the government. I hate to say it.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't going to put you in a position to say that, but I'm glad you offered it up.
I'll tell you what I think, that's for sure, as you'll find out, that even with MUFON, I love MUFON. I've been a pain in their side ever since I've been with them, because I'm always trying to change things and saying this is better and that's better. I'm excited with MUFON right now, because I don't know if you're able to see their new show on Friday night, I believe it's called Hangar One. And quite frankly, I think it's great. These UFO shows in the past, I can't watch them. I mean, I'm ready to jump out a window after I get done watching some of these shows.
I didn't realize that was a MUFON show. What is their level of participation in it?
Well, they're the ones who put this whole thing together. Yeah, Hangar One on Friday night. It's an excellent show. I'm really very excited about it. And they're the ones who I just got together with, the writers and producers, and they see me doing a hell of a job with the show. You know, there's only one problem, and maybe making MUFON more credible as a UFO organization, but, you know, but the problem is I already see a rise in people reporting UFO sightings to MUFON, which is good. But the bad part is, I don't think MUFON is essentially prepared to handle a larger caseload than what they have. You know, MUFON seems to have a hard enough time trying to get investigators, good investigators, because quite frankly, a lot of the investigators, some are debunkers, and some of them do not, they don't have a clue what they're doing. And I feel even some of the state directors, they should be overseeing this, and some of them don't at all. So, but then again, I'm starting to understand that, you know, if you have a ton of sightings to do, after a while you start shortcutting and you know, maybe not doing the best investigation you can, because essentially we're all volunteers. You know, I don't get paid a penny for investing 2 to 3 hours a day into UFO sightings and MUFON sightings and MUFON cases and everything else. You know, we're not being paid. So, I mean, you have to be very into ufology, and you have to have a passion for it. And the bad part is, you know, a lot of these investigators don't have a clue what they're getting into when they join MUFON. And, you know, they think it's going to be real neat. They're going to investigate UFO sightings. But essentially, you know, 99% of all UFO cases are done over the phone. Since MUFON doesn't pay us gas money or anything to travel to a, you know, to an actual sighting, it would be kind of foolish for me to drive 40 miles to a witness house, and the witness points up in the sky and says, yeah, that's where I saw the UFO. You know, that's it's kind
of... I have to question at this point the leadership of MUFON at the top levels not being able to secure some base of financing that would enable them to at least have some sort of paid professional team, especially to help people like you do your job. And I'll give you, for instance, there's all kinds of grant money out there, all kinds of foundational support, and yet, oddly, they'll support all kinds of really, frankly, very twisted and sick shit that our taxpayer dollars go for, but no one will subsidize or be a benefactor for research into UFOs?
Yeah, that could be the case where I would think that Jan Harzan, he seems to be a pretty good guy. He's on the show there, Hangar One. He's the new director for MUFON. Seems to be very intelligent and very knowledgeable, and I'm hoping that these guys on the board of director from MUFON, I'm hoping they're trying to get some kind of funding. Like you said, the government will fund, you know, a research team to discover how many eggs a tsetse fly has in Brazil. It's ridiculous. And I'm kind of hoping they are trying to get some funds for the research with UFOs. Now, of course, they did get the entrepreneur Bigelow from Las Vegas a few years back.
Right,
but,
right.
He kind of dropped out of it with MUFON because I guess he felt that MUFON wasn't getting what he wanted. I think Bigelow wanted, he wanted to be the first one there, first on scene if MUFON found a crashed saucer or something like that. I think that's the reason why he even got involved.
My understanding is that Bigelow also managed to secure the rights for all first reports from pilots.
Yes, I heard that also. He's supposed, yeah, from the government, they're reporting a lot of these things directly to him. So,
which is kind of disturbing, given what happened with the databases of abductee reports vis-a-vis Mr. Bigelow at the time that he funded them. There was a quid pro quo that went on there. And Ken, I'm not slamming MUFON. I would really like to see it make it. But it feels to me like at this point, unless they do something extremely brilliant and start upping their game, they're going to become almost obsolete in terms of ufology. The private researchers out there are, like you, the work that you're doing, are rapidly outstripping MUFON. I think that's actually a shame.
Yeah, you may be right. There are some up-and-coming UFO, but it's organizations also. But it's a shame now because we have a few organizations, National UFO Reporting Center in Washington State. That's Peter Davenport. We've got Billy Booth, UFO Casebook.
Yes.
Now I even have people sending me UFO reports, which in a way is good, but then again it's bad because now we do not have a central, we need a central point where people can send their UFO reports, not to this one, not to that one, but to one. We need that one organization where all of the information will come into. Otherwise, it's kind of scattered all over, and we're losing a lot of important information that can possibly hook up or connect certain UFO sightings that happen, daily.
Yeah, and again, I want to make the distinction, because while I'm critical of the national organization, I'm a big fan of a lot of the people like you who are working on the state chapter level. I mean, a lot of people don't make that distinction, but I understand the structure of MUFON and know how it kind of operates. And there is this kind of perception out there of MUFON being this kind of slow, cumbersome group that can't really, even as a member of MUFON, I wasn't able to get really good research materials from them. In fact, I could rarely get a newsletter out of them. And that's kind of sad, but I want to deflect from that and say that there are superb people on the ground that are doing great work within the structure of MUFON. So guys at MUFON, if you hear this, we need to get our act together. We gotta pull this thing up another notch in order to get things where they should be.
Yeah, no, you're right, Randy, 100%. You know, we need to take to the next level. With the additional sightings and everything else, quite frankly, I don't think disclosure is going to happen, not in my lifetime, and I really don't want disclosure to happen because I don't think people will be able to handle it.
I grapple with the term disclosure. I think you look at your website, you look at the work that researchers have been doing, people like Chris Holly, the reporting that I've been doing on UFOs over the last 6 years. We have disclosure at some level. I don't think you're going to ever have the landing on the White House lawn. I don't think we're going to get that. I think disclosure is basically, once we begin to pay attention to this phenomenon, we're going to become more attenuated to it. And as a result of that, the encounters themselves will be, let's say, a little bit more personal over time, if, you know, indeed that's what we want.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Well, the only thing with disclosure, I think, if the president would come on TV and say, hey, guys, I just want, we've been visited by aliens and are here, and there's nothing we can do about it. I don't see anybody that would ever want to say that on television. But it would kind of, it would be too much explaining to do.
Yeah, it's a cliche take me to your leader kind of thing. No, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think that's the way this works.
Yeah.
You know, I do think, and I know I get metaphysical a lot, but I do think this is a consciousness thing. I think this is something that has to do with humanity itself and where we are in development right now. And if there's interaction, if there's any type of interference from alien forces, it has been subtle and in the background in terms of benevolence, in terms of the abductions, that's an entirely different subject matter altogether. Let me dogleg you a minute, because I don't know if we've ever talked about this. In your experience of researching, how close have you gotten to hot abduction cases that you felt with your gut were genuine, real, and actually kind of creepy?
I've been involved with a couple abduction cases. Quite frankly, I don't want to talk about the specifics about them. I respect the privacy of the people who were involved, but mm-hmm. Essentially, we had a hypnosis session over at George Fowler. Of course, you know George Fowler. He's the director of MUFON in New Jersey, and of course, George is an icon in the UFO community. But we had a hypnosis session over at his house a few years back, and quite frankly, the witness was from the Pittman, New Jersey area, not too far from me, and very credible. As a matter of fact, it seemed that and his family for many, many years, even his children, have been going through this abduction experience. And we had the hypnosis session, this guy was under, and it was just really, it was just very incredible as to what he acted, the way he acted, the way he sounded, what he told us, and I'm against it myself. I've had many people, I get many people always, especially now they're sending me their abduction stories, and of course, they probably sent these stories to other UFO organizations or whatever.
We all get them. Those of us who are in the alternative press get them all the time.
Yeah, they're always just now they're sending them to me, and I basically tell them. They say, "Well, you know, what should I do? Should I have, you know, should I be hypnotized?" And I tell them, "No." I says, quite frankly, you may not want to open up that Pandora's box. I don't think you'll be ready to be able to deal with what has happened to you.
So maybe we'll move on a little bit here, because I was interested to get your take on the abduction phenomenon. And as far as hypnosis goes, I think you and myself, and I can speak for Chris emphatically because we've talked about it, are kind of against the idea of inducing hypnotic states in order to bring memories out, for a number of reasons, not the least of which is there's been some very bad side effects to it, as you pointed out, plus the fact that, you know, there is a suggestive aspect to being hypnotized that I don't trust.
Yeah.
Memories will eventually come out organically, and that seems to be true with people over maybe several decades, especially people who had abduction experiences as children. This stuff tends to bleed out over time, which seems like, to me, a safer way for people to regain memories without going through all the trauma. It's still a shock, and it's still a horrible realization.
Oh, yeah.
But it's much more gradual.
Oh, you're right. I think that, like I said, I've told people just to stay away from it. You may not want to open up that door, I'm not sure what they did, but we do have a in-house hypnotist licensed. As a matter of fact, I think he's possibly still a chief of police or a retired chief of police from North Jersey. We have one of our investigators from New Jersey that I sent him all of the abduction cases, but quite frankly, we don't get many. I would say maybe one every couple months, but now that this TV show Hangar One has aired, I think we're going to be getting a lot more people calling into MUFON, and that's another funny thing too, is because quite frankly, I think there's 90% of the population out there has no idea who to call or what to do if they see something in the sky. Like I say to people, I'm always talking to people, hey, I'm an investigator for MUFON, and they say, MUFON, what's that? So it seems to me that there are millions of people out there who don't have an idea as to, I guess they're not into the UFO thing. They're either decide to put it out of their mind, or they're just ignorant about things flying around in the sky, and some of them just don't want to deal with it, I think.
Yeah, there's this perception that it's kind of a fringe subject. People who bring it up to me in my own personal life sometimes are kind of like, it's one of those sidebar conversations you have with people where they'll kind of let you know that, I've seen something, or I know something that's out there, or I've been reading this or watching that. This is not open conversation in the mainstream because it's been stigmatized, which I think the stigmatization of it was planned. I think if you look at the way major media handles these type of stories, it's always done dismissively, it's done with a chuckle, it's treated as a light subject at the end of the news rather than the type of serious type event that would normally be given a little bit more gravity. Other than the Phoenix Lights, I can't think of any that have been taken too seriously. And of course, that was so badly hoaxed and debunked by the governor at the time that unfortunately that played right into the same roundabout that we have in media regarding UFO sightings.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not, I think a lot of people talk about Roswell. Quite frankly, I think the UFO sightings in Washington D.C. in 1952. I mean, that they were swept under the rug, and I think That was such an incredible event.
Here in the Northeast, we think of UFOs, we think of the deserts of Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and of course California, which is UFO central. Most people don't realize that the Northeast Corridor has been a UFO haven for my entire lifetime, and yours as well.
Oh, yeah.
Major sightings. And, you know, honestly, the Washington, D.C. sightings, Robert Stanley's done an excellent job writing about that, but it's been relatively underdocumented.
Yeah, now there's some pretty good articles on there. That's the July 1952. As a matter of fact, one of our investigators, he's a retired policeman. The reason why he joined MUFON and wanted to be an investigator a few years back is because his brother-in-law had a triangle sighting in Woodstown, in New Jersey, and my wife also had a triangle sighting in Woodstown also a few years ago. But he joined MUFON and basically told me that when he was 9 years old, him and his family, they lived on the outskirts of Greater Wilmington Airport. I'm not sure if that's what the name of the airport was back in 52, but he said his family lived right there, you know, across the runway from the airport, and his father worked as maintenance, I guess, in the airport. And one night, you know, July 1952, you know, the date that all this happened, his father came running around the house, and he told them to, you know, stay in the house, don't go outside. And then, you know, his father took off, and I guess he was going over to the airport to do whatever he was doing. So, of course, you know, you say this to a 9-year-old boy, and the first thing he's going to do is go outside, which he did.
Yeah.
And at the time, I believe Greater Wilmington Airport, or Newcastle Airport, I guess is what it was possibly called, I believe they had a squadron of F-84s there at the time, and they were scrambling planes out of the airport, and he told me that he saw a glowing disc, flying saucer, essentially hovering at the end of the runway. And I've never heard this before. I've never heard any research. I've never heard anything about this. So, quite frankly, I'm in the process of researching this. And the hard part is going to be trying to find witnesses, you know, that also lived in the area of 1952 there and Greater Wilmington, Delaware, that also saw it. But you know, that's basically new information we have now on that the UFO flap in July 1952 over Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we've had a lot of flaps in the Northeast that you know, I think, again, regionally, because of the way things are reported, do we have an historical record? Do we have good statistics on sightings from, let's say, the 1950s forward in terms of breaking them out regionally?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. I'm sources say that, you know, they feel that only 5% of all of the UFO cases seen are possibly, you know, UFOs / aliens. But quite frankly, I think that them figures are much higher. I would say.
Well, I've seen people reverse that equation and say only 5% of them can be identified.
No, actually, that's what I meant.
Okay, I get what you're saying now. So you're saying that only about 5% of them can be accounted for?
Yeah, that's what the so-called sources say, but I think that the numbers are much higher. I think that could be 30 or 40% of these sightings are actual UFO sightings, especially with MUFON. You know, I've seen many of the sightings reported to MUFON, they were just written off as you know, birds, bugs, you know, lens flares, whatever you can think of, and I think a lot of these cases should be actually classified as unknown, which would, you know, raise that figure. So instead of 5% of all the cases being real, I think it'd be more like 30 or 40% of all of these cases reported are possibly the real thing, real UFOs.
Are you currently getting a fair amount of buzz from people who are reporting orb sightings? And I'm talking about distinctively maybe the larger orbs that we've talked about before. Are we seeing more of that?
Yeah, we've always gotten, from what I've seen, MUFON has always gotten a lot of reports on orbs. And quite frankly, you know, a lot of the reports that we get, even now, it's a lot of orb reports, you know, orange orbs and and things like that. Yeah, we're getting a lot of them, and you know, I think they could be some. I think they're some kind of intelligence. I think they're extraterrestrial. They could be just things that are doing recon for you know, something larger. And yeah, we've been getting a lot of reports on orbs, and we always have, and they seem to be one of the mainstream of UFO sightings are these orbs.
So tell us a little bit about some of your most recent discoveries. I know you have one in particular that you're very excited to talk about. It has to do with something that you've found on the surface of Mars.
Yeah, I've been finding many things on Mars. The one that really is just incredible, I think. I think you may have the photo there.
I have it in front of me. Yes.
Yeah, the Mars Newton crater. That's the one that was discovered by me in November of 2011. This was through NASA, JPL, University of Arizona. I was able to find this. Of course, sometimes it may take me 5, 6, 7 hours to scan an area of Mars, and every once in a while, you know, something kind of pops out at you. And looking at this, the thing that really mystifies me is the object to the right. It looks like little round balls. There's a big round ball there in the center, and there's a round, some kind of a object to the left, and two of them up on the top. And just looking at that, I have been finding this object essentially all over Mars. Or similar to it, you know. I'm not sure what it is. At first, I thought maybe it was possibly a craft, and then I'm thinking maybe it's some kind of a radio telescope type of a building. But I've been finding this strange anomaly all over the place, and it seems like every time I go on a website there. That's the thing with NASA. NASA has made it so, all the information is there to find, but they have made it so hard to find that it's a maze. It's a maze of websites, and you know, you finally find a website that has really good high definition photos, and then 30 days later the website's not there, or it's changed, or they changed the format. But there seems to be 100 different websites out there that is with NASA, and the trick is trying to find the right website that has the high-definition photos. Now, what I have done is, just for the hell of it, I went to Google Earth, and of course, you know, with Google Earth, they have Google Mars, and I have just found some incredible things just through Google Earth here. You know, if you click on Google Earth, what you can do is zoom down onto the surface of Mars. And when you do zoom down, you'll notice that these little red boxes or orange boxes will pop up. Well, what you can do is click on them boxes, and they will give you a supposedly high-depth image to scan, to look at. And that some of them are high def and some of them aren't. So, you know, you have to weed through the junk. You have to weed through the, and hopefully you do get a very high def image of Mars. And then, you know, it's just taking your time and knowing how to scan these things. So you make sure that you see every, you know, square mile or square foot, I guess you can say, of the area that you're looking at. So I've found a ton of things. As a matter of fact, if you go on Google Mars, you can also, what I do is zoom down to the dark areas of Mars. North Mars seems to be a very good area up there that you don't even have to click on to these boxes. You can go directly to the dark areas on North Mars and be able to zoom in. And like I said, some of them are very high def, and some of these areas aren't. So, you know, it's essentially trying to find the ones that are high definition that you can just to zoom right in and look at, and it's just incredible some of the things I've been finding.
Do you have any idea the date of the photo that we have in front of us right now? By the way, the listeners who are hearing this on audio, these photos are on the websites accompanying this this show, so you can find them there to download and look at. The date on this particular photograph that you analyzed?
Oh, that's the Mars Newton crater?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, I can find out a date. I can get that through the University of Arizona. What I should have, as a matter of fact, this was one of my first discoveries, and as you will see, what I've done in my more recent discoveries, I'm loading more information.
Yeah, well, because I'm looking at the image off Google Earth, but there's no date or time stamp on it that I can make out. I was just curious to know if you knew which mission these photos were from.
No, but the information is all there, really. All you have to is the information. They do have a ton of information, especially the one there. My one here is near Cassini Crater. That, you know, as you can see, I've been putting down the longitude and latitude, so you can actually go to this location yourself and telling you when I discovered it and the time and basically the source. But what I'm going to be doing in the future, since I'm finding so many of these discoveries on the Mars and Moon, I'm going to be more detailed in, descriptions of where I find it and where you can also go to see it. So I'm in the process of doing that as we speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of data that unfortunately is kind of still out in the wild. And I'm grateful for people like you, Ken, that are doing the curating on this. It needs to be done. It's kind of a frustration that here in the information age, again, we don't have a database we can go to and go through information in an organized way. I mean, when you consider the software we have now in terms of being able to do statistics and being able to do analysis and the type of software that can do pretty deep graphic analysis, we're kind of left to almost hunt and scour for these little nuggets that come up.
Well, as we were saying before, I'm looking at another one of these Mars photos I sent you, the one that says Mars, Google Mars, object discovered by Ken Pfeiffer, 12-113.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that one there. Now, that image was taken directly from Google Mars. I mean, I zoomed down into Google Mars, and you could do it yourself. You can zoom down into the Sarah-Eunice Thoris crater, I guess that's how you pronounce it. The why they give us these crazy names is beyond me. But you can zoom into that yourself right there just on Google Mars, and you should be able to find that object hiding in the shadows on the left-hand side of the crater. So, and I do have the information here, ESA, European Space Agency. This photo was taken by the European Space Agency January 10, 2008. So this one here, I did have that information, and like I said before, I'm going to be adding more information to these discoveries in the future.
I'm guessing that all of these space agencies, the European Space Agency and any of the other, well, even China's got a space program, but are we in cooperation with them? And I put that in curlies there. Cooperation, are these images all being filtered through a central source, or is it likely that some of this stuff just simply isn't examined deep enough and gets away from them?
I think you're right. No, I don't think everything is sent to a central source. As a matter of fact, so with some of these NASA photos, I think I'm excited about doing this because sometimes I feel I'm the only person that has ever, I'm the first person in the entire world that has seen the surface of certain parts of Mars and the Moon, and I think that some of these other agencies are just putting the information out there, thinking that maybe some people will find something, but most people won't. And I think that they've kind of underestimated a lot of the ufologists out there who, like myself, who I enjoy doing this. I mean, I feel like an explorer every time I go on to Google Mars. I'm usually finding something that's very unique, very strange, and definitely not a natural formation. You know, so it's really weird. Like European Space Agency and now China and India, and I think there's a few other of them out there. They're just I really don't think they're going through the photos that they've been taking, and I'm still looking for their photos too. So that's the, you know, that's another point is I'm still trying to find some of their photos, because I feel that some of their photos would be untouched, and you know, they would be probably a higher definition than some of NASA's photos. So that's another part that I just don't have enough hours in a day to do all this. I'm looking for someone who can you know, essentially do this for me, and I'd like to put all the information on my main website, worldufophotos.org.
So if people out there are working on like little independent projects like this, if they're kind of like armchair astrogeologists or something like that, can they get in touch with you? Are you interested in that kind of thing?
Oh yeah, no, of course. If they have any things that they have found, you know, sometimes though I see these images on, you know, they found something on Mars and they found something on the moon, and quite frankly, I can't.
Well, and I gotta say this: we have a story. It's dated today. Actually, it was dated Wednesday, April 9th, 2014.
That's the one about the city on Mars?
Light.
Yeah, now I will not put that on my website because I just don't think it's defined enough.
I was kind of surprised after looking at the image at how much woo-ha there was over this. It wasn't spectacular.
Yeah. Now this picture, I think, here. Now, what do you think about this one?
I'm looking at your images, and I find it more compelling.
Yeah, that's what I'll tell you.
And I'm not blowing smoke on you here. This is just looking at that while I'm still looking at it and puzzling over it. It's curious enough, it's anomalous enough that you want to take a look at it. Whereas the image that CNN put up and that everybody's all gaga over, you know, it could be anything. I admit it's interesting to entertain the idea. But what the Curiosity rover photographed there needs a whole lot more examination and explaining than I've seen so far for the amount of publicity it's gotten.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, like I said, a lot of these photos I'm saying, you know, I don't see it. And I see a lot of that when I do this research on Mars and the moon. I mean, I won't even publish it if I think that it's going to be debunked right away. If I think the only ones I publish are things that I feel that people will be able to see and possibly recognize or admit that it's something unnatural. It's not a natural formation, like the one Mars photo I sent to you on the area southeast of Olympia Planum there, possible craft discovered by Ken Pfeiffer. That I've seen this image quite a few times on Mars, but this is one of the clearer ones that I was able to get through Google Mars, so you know that's why I sent that to you, because I'm not sure what that is, but it sure doesn't look natural to me.
Have you ever seen the work done by Andrew Bosciago, who has posted images of humanoid figures on Mars?
I probably have. His name doesn't ring a bell, but I'm sure I probably
Yeah,
have.
His name's Andrew Bosciago. I've interviewed him before. He's an attorney from Washington State, and he's got some other pretty incredible stories, but he's actually published a whole series of 2008 NASA photos where he's identifying what he believes to be different life forms on Mars. And I got to tell you, you know, I've talked to him about it, and I find what he's found to be compelling because he's put a lot of work into this, and he actually has higher resolution photos than the ones that have been released publicly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the photos that he has, I guess, are too high resolution for him to put up on his website, apparently.
Yeah. Do you have a website for him? Or?
Yeah, you can go to projectmars.net.
Okay, Mars?
Projectmars.net, yeah.
Okay, I'll check that out. That's interesting. I love that stuff.
And, you know, like I said, I've talked to him about it. He's very adamant about this. He's been trying to pry information out of some other people, including Richard Hoagland, who has also done some great research, but also apparently suppressed some images of Mars related to the face on Mars and some other structures that it makes it appear as though we've got more than one set of structures on Mars. And, you know, again, all of this is being funneled through different people. We don't really have a way to collate all this data? I mean, we've apparently got high-definition photography, I would think, at this point. But, you know, being able to analyze it and get the original... they're posting most of this stuff in lossless JPEG format, which to me kind of loses the point when you can do a dump from a camera and have full binary image data.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
And I think that's the bottleneck right now. I think they're comfortable releasing most of this because they know that we're not working with the raw images that they're pulling off of for their obviously very expensive cameras.
Oh yeah, oh that's for sure. I was thinking that Hoagland, he's got some excellent things on his website. Now I've sent him a few of my things. You know, some of the. Things that I found that are even more definite than these four things that I've sent you, and you just don't get no one emails you back. You know, you just don't get a response, and I'm really not sure what that's all about.
Well, I'll tell you what it's all about. This is the part that drives, I think, a lot of us crazy. There's no teamwork. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of people out there who have built cottage industries out of this. And I mean, some of them make their money publishing and speaking tours and things like that. I don't have a problem with people making money. But at some point, it makes sense to me that if you're a researcher, you're going to link up with other researchers and you're going to share data. This was typically the way academia worked. But we have within the space of alternative research this hyper-competitive, super paranoid quality to it that's really restricted the free flow of information in a way that's it's really crippling us in terms of being able to research and investigate.
You're exactly right. No, I can't argue with that.
So unfortunately, we're left with, well, maybe we're not, but this kind of ad hoc thing where, you know, people who are out there all over the internet, there's millions of people researching this stuff and posting it up, and I'm hoping that somehow or another we find some way to begin amassing this data, validating it, putting it through a little bit more due diligence, and being able to put something together that resembles a working database.
Well, that's what I'm essentially trying to do with my website itself, worldviewphotos.org. As you can see, as you already know, I have a bunch of galleries, Mars galleries, Moon galleries, my discoveries, strange things. I even got into the ghosts there. I had some people that had some incredible ghost photos that I'm posting, but I'm trying. That's where I'm trying to accumulate all this information. I've had a lot of people send me a lot of things that I published on my website, and of course, I give everyone whoever sends me something. I give them credit for the source for the photo. If they want their full name or initials added to the photo, then that's what I do because you know I always love to credit the source. But that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get all this great stuff on one website, and so far it's slow, but it seems to be taking off.
You, as you do not shy away from calling certain sightings alien, you also don't seem to shy away from, I guess, the more exotic explanations of space travel, time travel, dimensional aspects to this. What is your sense in terms of ufology of trying to correlate these events? You talked for a minute about ghosts, and for a long time I really resisted doing ghost shows while I was doing UFO shows. It's only in the last, I'd say maybe year, that I've come to a place where I'm starting to understand that there is overlap in all of these different, I guess, paranormal type sightings and experiences that people have. What is your, like, overall worldview in terms of what we're dealing with in terms of space, time, and dimensions, Ken?
Well, essentially, I'm open-minded. I may be a little bit too open-minded, and quite frankly, I think anything is possible. As a matter of fact, I sent an article to Chris Holly there last week, and I don't know if she was able to run it by you, but essentially, supposedly, Boston scientists, university scientists, they've admitted that dreams are real.
They've
done experiments and they were able to bring things back from dreams. And I'm saying that kind of blew me away.
That came from Harvard University.
Yeah, you know, these guys are scientists, and I mean, what? How do you debunk that? Do you call them liars? I think anything's possible. I really do. I'm a dreamer myself. I have what they call it, lucid dreams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can do whatever I want in my dreams. As a matter of fact, there are some devices you can buy that helps you. It helps you realize that you're dreaming, like while you're dreaming.
Yes, being able to basically go into a delta state and yet maintain a certain level of awareness.
Yeah, I live a parallel life in my dreams,
sure.
Essentially.
Yeah, so really do I, very much. You know, by the way, my frustration with that article that you sent me from Harvard is that I can't seem to source the original paper, which was what I was trying to do with that. If you ever come up with that paper, that document, that we can locate it, I'd like to read the whole thing.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was very, you know, every once in a while I talked to Chris and she said, if you come across anything strange, which I do all the time, that one really stuck out. But if I can find any more information about it, I'll send it to you.
And the only reason I brought up the CNN article with the so-called light is at least now the mainstream is putting a little bit of attention on this, at least because there's the internet and we're not living between 30-second sound bites on mainstream media anymore. There's some space for some of this to come out. So I find that encouraging despite my kind of dismissal of the image itself.
Yeah, I think the news agencies are starting to open up a little bit more. I remember in the past, a few years ago, one of the interviewers was doing who's that famous interviewer, the old guy? He's on TV. He used to be on TV all the time. His name slips my mind.
Eric Severide?
No, the old, geez.
That's the oldest guy I can think of, sorry.
Yeah, well, that's, oh, God, what I...
It's okay, I understand.
Yeah, but essentially he had a UFO show, which was great. You know, he had some people on, he had some professionals, he had some debunkers. He did a great show. And at the end of the show, he said, "Yes, people, and next week we're going to have wrestlers on, and also the people who discovered Bigfoot." And like he basically blew the whole thing right there. He just
described. Yeah, and that is actually the way the media was trained to handle this. This goes back to the 50s. I'm trying to remember the name of the committee now, where they investigated UFO sightings and basically slapped it down and said, we're not going to dignify this anymore. This was actually before Project Blue Bunk went into full... Project Blue Bunk is a good name for it. Blue Book went into full-on mode, which was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But that's part of the media pulling the constant rug out from underneath any type of disclosure-type information.
I'll tell you, you know what has always... what I don't want to say it bothers me because, of course, I'm not a prejudiced person myself, but it's really strange how the media is brainwashing us in a way. I don't know if you noticed, but there are even all the TV shows, there is always a minority who is the boss.
Yes.
Or the president.
Yes.
Or the general. Or it's just every show. And it's just telling me this is just the way the media is trying to brainwash us in a way. But it's just strange to me that you know, how they do it and why they do it. I don't know. That's a matter of another topic.
Well, I've done major rants about this because, no, it is brainwashing. And, you know, but you raise an interesting point. What we call our government is a multi-headed hydra, and it's not particularly intelligent. It's not even really particularly well organized. It just has so damn much money that it doesn't matter. I'm appalled at how little leakage we've actually seen come out of the military. Even the military people who have an investment and an involvement in the UFO community.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
I'm wondering if you ever encounter military people, and you don't need to name names or anything, if you encounter military people who are either confiding in you things that they wouldn't say publicly, or if they're not a little bit embarrassed with the fact that these UFOs continue to snooker our government.
Personally, no. I really haven't had any. I was in McGuire Air Force Base and also Dover Air Force Base, and you know, I'm a talker. I like talking to people and asking questions, and I've had many conversations with officers and pilots, you know, who fly around the world every day, essentially, and they shy away from the subject. You know, I brought it up. Hey, you guys ever seen any UFOs? Laughingly, and you know, that subject
makes them a little uncomfortable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was a taboo subject, and I could sense that right away.
Them talking about it now means that they're going to have to go see a psychiatrist.
Probably, or lose their flying privileges, more than likely.
Yeah, yeah. So really, it is a mind control operation that's still in full roll in terms of the wink, wink, no, there's really nothing up there, and most of you are delusional, insane, or need to buy new eyeglasses.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad you brought that up, because for our listeners, maybe what they can do is Google, there was an alien being shot at the dead at McGuire Air Force Base, January 18th, 1978.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk about that.
Yeah, they Google alien, shots, 1978, a ton of things will pop up, and of course, UFO Casebook had they have the article right here that essentially George Filer, he was my boss, he was stationed at McGuire at the time, and he was in the intelligence section of the Air Force, and he wasn't directly involved, but when he reported for duty, they reported. When he got there, they told him what happened and everything else, and you know, he kind of took it from there. But that's a very interesting story here. Just Google McGuire shot alien, and a ton of things ought to pop up on it. But that's one of the great cases, I think. This happened, and I'm not going to call it a UFO. I'm going to call it an alien body was shot. So. You know, even the UFO Casebook, it's right in the headline. Alien being shot dead by military police, January 18th, 1978. So, Billy Booth from UFO Casebook, he likes to call it like it is, too, sometimes.
Yeah, we've had Billy on the show.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's, again, another one of the foot soldiers out there that are doing great work. I guess here in the last few minutes, Ken...
Okay.
Kind of give us your plans for this year and what you think it's going to look like in terms of ufology. Are we any closer from looking backward and looking forward? Are we making progress despite the fact that we're unorganized, underfunded, and kind of hopelessly behind the clock right now?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited, especially with MUFON right now with their new show. I feel that they're making an effort. I've seen a few of today's TV shows, and they seem to be, a few years ago, all they wanted to do was debunk cases, but now they're laying out the facts and they're letting you make a decision whether it's a real thing or not, so which is exciting to me. At least the debunking seems to have went away in some of these shows, but I'm excited because I think that... MUFON is trying to get on the right track here. They have a long way to go. I think they need to, their board of directors, I think they need to get some new blood on the board of directors with the things they're doing now. It seems to be old school, and like I said before, we need to update, modernize, streamline. We need to, there's a lot needs to be done to make MUFON the organization.
I'll tell you what MUFON needs to do. Here's my suggestion to MUFON. Get an iPhone app. Get an Android app. Put a MUFON app out that you can take pictures and enter all of the information about that photograph in a database automatically that they can send reports to MUFON electronically.
That's a wonderful idea. Now, just getting MUFON to do that
Well, yeah, of course, because it's an organization. So somebody out there needs to write an app, and we need to get it out on the internet, and you need to put it on your phone. And we organize as a large intelligence network of people who don't just believe but know there's stuff out there, and we want to start documenting it and make it grassroots. And when it becomes impossible to deny anymore, MUFON will benefit from the updraft that'll come from people who will finally have to fund the truth because they can no longer deny it.
Well, you're 100% right.
Ken, it's always great talking to you. I'm always grateful when you come on, you share images. And one more time as we end this interview, if there's anything you want to point people to, anything you're excited about, just closing shot.
Like I said, if everyone gets a chance, check out the new Hangar One MUFON show on Friday nights. Check out my website, theworldufophotos.org. If you have any photos, you can email them to me at falcon51@comcast.net. I'll look them over. Just give me a date and location, and if I think it's a real deal, I may publish it and with your name on there. So, no, I'm excited. I think we have a lot of exciting times ahead of us here, and I'm glad to be in the middle of it.
It's a good time to be alive, and it's a great time to be a researcher, no doubt about that. Again, we thank you for coming on. Ken Pfeiffer, New Jersey MUFON and Star Team Investigator, and his websites will be up with the links with the show, along with a slideshow of the photographs of the things he shared. And we'll be back very soon with some more shows. We're still kind of regrouping from a very long winter. I'm Randy Moggins. This is Off Planet Radio, and you can find us at offplanetradio.com. The truth's out there. It's inside you. Keep looking up.